May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be holy and pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and redeemer. Amen. In the film adaptation of The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, there is a scene where the young hobbits Frodo Baggins and Samwise Gamgee, played by Elijah Wood and Sean Austin, begin their journey. Frodo has the unenviable task, if you remember, of carrying the One Ring toward its destruction, marching past an army of orcs and other fearsome foes. Samwise is simply along for the ride. Hobbits aren't the type of people who go on adventures. They stick close to home and go about their quiet little lives. As Frodo and Sam approach a scarecrow at the edge of the Shire, their home, the place they've lived in all their lives, Sam stops. "This is it," he says. "This is it. If I take one more step, it will be the farthest away from home I have ever been." He takes the step, and so his journey begins. Now, our readings today collude around a similar theme. These are stories of people called to a task greater than themselves, stories about people who decide to take that first step forward. Isaiah sees the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lofty. This is it. This is it. Peter meets a wandering preacher called Jesus by the seashore. This is it. This is the moment for Peter. The Apostle Paul reminisces over the outrageous story behind his midlife conversion. This is it. Last of all, he says, as to one untimely born, he appeared also to me. This is the Apostle Paul at his best, declaring with clear conviction the good news of the gospel. And it's a significant passage, not just because it summarizes the content of the Christian faith succinctly, but also because of what it tells us about the early church. Let me give you a bit of background here. Though Paul's letters come after the gospels in the Bible, they are likely to have been written before the gospels themselves. The stories about Jesus spread by way of oral tradition. In a time before the printing press, people told and retold these stories rather than writing them down. It was probably a few decades before the Gospels began to take shape, the earliest of them, by our best guess, written around the fall of the Second Temple in 70 AD. Many scholars think that Paul's letters, especially Paul's letter to the Corinthians, the one we're reading from today, was written probably in the 50s and 60s. The original 50s and 60s, mind you. Think about that. Making this text one of the earliest attestations of the content of the Christian faith. Paul is telling us here, it is true. This happened. I wasn't there, but I know people who were. And given my own wild experience about Jesus, I feel compelled to tell you about it too. Even in the early gathered community of disciples, people had a clear vision of the meaning of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. These people had an experience of the risen Christ that changed their lives forever. So much for explaining away the strangeness of the gospel, so much for those who would like to believe that the claims about Jesus' resurrections and his wonder-working power came later, as his story spread through a complex game of telephone. Paul, the most unlikely disciple, the former inquisitor and terrorizer of early Christians, is here to tell you otherwise. This happened. I know some people who were there, and I had my own experience of it, and I'm here to tell you about it too. And we have come to know him as that most conspicuous man on a mission, St. Paul the Apostle, the only apostle who bears the name without having walked with Jesus in his earthly ministry, the one who has buildings named after him the world over, including the one we're sitting in today. Now, there is something else at play here, though, something we can learn about what it means to be called, the thread spinning its way through each of our readings today. And that something has an impact on how we figure out what we are each called to do, what that word, calling, vocation, means for us today. First, God's call doesn't happen on our timeline. King Uzziah had died. A war with Assyria raged at Isaiah's door. This is it. This is it, Isaiah. You are called to speak right now. Peter lived under imperial occupation, but he'd rather have continued fishing for fish like normal fishermen do. This is it, Peter. This is the moment. You are called to do something greater than yourself here. Paul was busy persecuting the very people whom he would one day lead. This is it, Paul. This is your moment. You have a mission to carry out. What they share isn't ideal circumstances, but receptivity. Now, true, Paul had to be blinded into being receptive, if you remember the story of his conversion on the road to Damascus, but the fact remains, what they all share is a decision to say, here am I, send me. Now, second, being called isn't synonymous with being gifted, skilled, or worthy. Isaiah was a man of unclean lips, living among a people of unclean lips, and yet he spoke words that we remember to this day. Peter, a simple fisherman, is the rock on whom the church is founded, and Paul, oh Paul, no one would seem less qualified than an accomplice to persecution and murder. We do not need to be gifted, skilled, or worthy. We just need to be willing. Third, and lastly, just so you know, and this is maybe less obvious to us from our vantage point thousands of years later, to be called does not imply a single decision, but a lifetime of faithfulness. We remember the stories of these Bible characters only in part. The truth is, these moments aren't ever the full story. They were human, and because of that, I am sure they doubted. I wonder if Isaiah woke up the day after his first vision and thought he was crazy. I wonder if Peter, years down the road, thought about going back to a simpler life on the Sea of Galilee. I wonder if Paul really had no reason to believe that he would be successful. In fact, if you read his letters closely, you'll realize that he spent most of his time dealing with conflict related to his leadership and doubt about the content of his message. And yet Paul leaves us a clue here, a clue about being called, a clue about working out our salvation, right at the beginning of today's reading. I would remind you, brothers and sisters, he says, of the good news that I proclaim to you, which you in turn received, in which also you stand, through which also you are being saved. Note that he doesn't say the good news through which you were saved. He says it's the good news through which you are being saved. It's a process. It's an ongoing decision. Something we do daily. To find our purpose isn't a single moment, but the work of a lifetime. And through that work, we are being saved, made into a people pulled from every tribe, tongue, and nation, made into that vision of the heavenly banquet, the feast yet to come. Thank God for that. Thank God that we have the opportunity to take part in an ongoing process of conversion. Thank God for the good news proclaimed to us, which we have in turn received, in which also we stand, and by which we are all being saved. Take just one step, my friends, and then the next, and let us be the people God has called us to be. Amen.